The movies are great medicine. We thank you, Thomas Edison. Welcome to the SAFTAcast. I'm your host, Scott C. It's a mini-sode episode today. A mini-sode, whatever we call them. Yeah, we call them mini-sodes. Talking about summer movies, but before I get into that, let me talk to you about a couple things from the Sundress Academy for the Arts. As always, this weekend in Knoxville, it is Pride Weekend, and Sundress Academy will be there on hand distributing information about their upcoming Outspoken show, which happens a week from this weekend, June 27th and 28th. It is happening. For information, tickets, and more, check out sundresspublications.com/outspoken. That's one word, outspoken, and learn all about what is happening next week when they present their second annual Outspoken event. It is going to be wonderful. As well, at Pride, they will be there selling t-shirts for Sundress Outspoken, and these t-shirts are adorable. And I am not kidding. They are a lamb decked out in rainbows. Illustrated, it is adorable. Seriously, I love it. Backtracking for a moment to our previous episode, I mentioned last time about a new endeavor from the Sundress Academy for the Arts on the web from our very own and former guest here on the SAFTAcast, Darren C. Demery, has teamed up with others to create the Sundress Cookbook online. It is a video series where he and a guest cook something in Darren's kitchen and then talk about things. It's truly a great web series, and their first episode has dropped. And you can check it out on YouTube. For information about the program, and I encourage you, check this out, sundresscookbook.com. That is all one word, sundresscookbook.com. You can learn about the June episode and who the guest is for July. I think it will be a good one. Trust me on this. Hey, speaking of trust, you can trust me when it comes to movies and my opinions on them. And you can also trust our guest today, returning to the program, Jameson Stallsworth. We've had him on the program before with SAFTA Films, a director and filmmaker, joining us again to talk about some of the films that are coming out this summer in theaters, as well as one that is already out in theaters. And we give our opinions on what to expect, what to believe in them, and what you can perceive. And, you know, when we sat down to rank these films, we decided on a ranking system, a rating system, if you will, that avoids stars, that avoids the abstract thumbs up or thumbs down. Well, it's not really that abstract, but you know what I mean. We decided to focus on what matters most, your hard-earned money. So we rank these films based on how much we would pay to actually see them. And our ranking system, as you will see, goes as follows. At the top of the list is Friday Night Premiere. I would be willing to pay Friday night prices to go see this film. Next is a matinee during the day, during the middle of the week, perhaps. Then right in the middle is a rental that I would go and rent this from somewhere, perhaps, for a night or two. Then below that is part of a streaming bundle. You know, whatever your preferred streaming service may be, it just happens to be there and amongst all the other stuff you've got in your queues. And then at the bottom is holiday gift from a relative who doesn't really know my tastes and just stopped off at a drugstore before they visited the house. And believe me, there are some of those films out there every summer. But hey, what year doesn't have a few stinkers in it? So sit back and enjoy it as Jameson and I take you through the summer movie season here with a few big ones that you're going to be hearing about in the near future. And as always, just a quick reminder, if you enjoy this program and you really dig it, go on to iTunes and give us a review. Reviews help this show get noticed among the many other podcasts out there and help us get more listeners and more awesome guests and more and more and more. So do us a favor, go over to iTunes, log in, and just find us in the store and give us a little review. Thank you. And now, the theme song. Jameson, welcome to the program, man. I'm doing all right. Let us talk summer movies. Director and critic alike, both of us. Let's get into this. First on our docket, a film that is already out in theaters just a week and has already shattered box office records, poised to become the big one of 2015, even bigger than Ultron, I would say at this point, Jurassic World.
Yeah, I just heard that like it's already, for opening weekend, it's like the biggest grossing film. I don't know if it was all time, if it was like the biggest weekend for a film or if it was just of the year. Definitely biggest film of the year.
So far.
She's a highly intelligent animal. She will kill anything that moves.
Oh, God.
Run!
So have you seen it yet?
I've seen it twice now, which is actually very, very rare that I will go to a theater and see a movie again. It's hard to get out to the theaters these days in the first place. But me and my wife, we went to see it on opening day, Friday. And then just last night, we went to the drive-in and took the kids to see it. So got to see it in the theater, got to see it in the drive-in. So it was a good mix of both theatrical experiences. And yeah, I mean, it's a pretty tremendous film. Like, it's pretty much just exactly what you'd expect a Jurassic Park movie to be. I think it takes everything that, you know, people you really need to experience and when you're watching the Jurassic Park movies, and it definitely brings all of that.
Explain to me, what do you mean by that?
It's really hard to explain. There's something about the first movie. I mean, in the first movie too, was, I mean, you could pretty much consider it a classic. Even though it's not super old, it feels really old to me because I was still very little when that first one came out. But, you know, that was, people just went berserk over that movie. And it's just the huge adventure thrill that, you know, is kind of gotten tired and old from movies today. I don't think people are quite as wowed when they see movies like that as they were when Jurassic Park came out. And somehow this movie makes you feel that same way. You don't just feel, you know, bored by giant CGI animals coming at you. You know, you actually really do get into it.
That was my big question about this film. I haven't seen it yet, but in 1993, when those bronchiosaurs come on the screen and Sam Neill stands up in the Jeep, that was us in the audience, and we were in Wonderland. And my biggest fear was that with CG being so good now, would we still have that wonder with this film?
I think they did a great job because I remember, you know, part of the thing that's so fantastic about the original is nobody knew what that was. You saw CG, nobody knew what that was. And they blended it so well with, you know, the amazing animatronic effects and practical effects that they used with Stan Winston building those dinosaurs. So it was so incredibly real that even when you watch it today, it's really hard to separate what was the CG and what was real. But yeah, the bottom line is that those big CG creatures just do not wow people anymore. I mean, you see them come on screen and you just kind of, you're just, eh, you know, we know it's computer. There's nothing you can do for us. And so I was really worried that this was going to be that, you know, because all of the dinosaurs are completely CG. There's, I think, only one shot where they use a sort of dinosaur puppet, and the rest is all computer, so there's no mystery to it. But I think they did a great job making it feel real in the right places. I mean, you see a dinosaur and you're like, yeah, it's computer, whatever. But the direction is so good in those key scenes that you really do feel the awe and the magnitude and the power in it. And that's really what, you know, makes you care for the characters that are trying not to get trampled. So it really worked.
Considering the director is not that well known, he hasn't done much outside of a couple years ago did Safety Not Guaranteed and has done a couple of smaller films. This is really his first big blockbuster, and That sounds good. What did the kids think of this film?
They were very antsy, I think, because we gave them tons of sugar before we showed up at the drive-in. And then the dinosaurs started coming on screen, and all of a sudden they started to settle down a little bit. So by the end of it, you know, they got the huge climax, and they were pretty glued to it. But it's really hard trying to experience it completely when you're at the drive-in. There's, you know, there's kids running around everywhere. So I was kind of worried that they wouldn't get the full experience the way I remember seeing the first one probably when I was about their age when that first one came out.
So is this going to be definitely a Christmas buy for the family?
This might just be a Christmas buy for me, and I will let the family watch it. I mean, I think we definitely need it because I definitely want them to, you know, go through the experience again because, you know, they may have missed one or two things. The oldest one, he fell asleep before the best parts, and so he has no idea what he's missing. I'm thinking that it'll thrill them to some extent to see it again.
So bottom line, what is your feeling on this film? Friday night opening, weekday matinee, rental, online streaming, or stocking stuffer from a relative who doesn't really know me well and just picked up something at Walgreens type of thing?
I would say, even though, you know, there's a few things I didn't totally like about this movie, it's got to be up there. So I'm going to say Friday night opening.
It's worth it then.
Yeah, because that's when I went and saw it. You know, I wasn't going to wait around for the DVD of this one. You definitely got to put it up. And even if it's not the kind of movie you go for, and this is typically not the kind of movie that I go for, you know, it delivers.
Excellent. Well, let's move on to films that are coming out soon enough. And we start our list with a movie called Selfless, starring Sir Ben Kingsley and Ryan Reynolds.
Which is a bizarre mix for me. I don't know. Does that seem weird? Like the two of them together? It seems like a weird pairing.
Not terribly. Ben Kingsley starred in Gandhi and won his Academy Award, but then he goes on in the 90s to be in movies like Species.
Yeah, that's true.
We offer humanity's greatest minds more time to fulfill their potential.
It's alive.
An empty vessel.
If we do this, there's no turning back. Your old life is over.
What's that?
Something to stop your heart.
What?
It's something to stop your heart.
What are your thoughts on Selfless?
Well, the first time I saw the trailer, I wasn't too impressed. But then when we went and saw Jurassic Park, the trailer was there again. Started to take notice to it because even though, you know, I wasn't totally drawn to it, I think there's something in this movie that could potentially be very worthwhile. There seems to be a lot of psychological entanglements and things like that, you know, really started to make me think, you know, that's a pretty dark, treacherous story that, you know, they're kind of telling here. And so this might be a lot better than it looks on the surface.
Let's give a quick recap of what this film is for those who may not be familiar with this one. Basically, Ben Kingsley is a rich white guy, old man, who is dying, and his brain and memories gets transplanted into the body of Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
And as time goes on, Ben Kingsley's mind and Ryan seem to fuse together, and we learn that the host's body is not all that pretty at all.
Is that the direct synopsis you're reading?
That's what I got from watching a trailer.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and that's pretty much what I saw. But, you know, it seemed to be the last time I saw the trailer, it seemed to indicate it's as though there's some residue of Ryan Reynolds' soul that starts to infiltrate his mind. The idea of, you know, two people becoming one, that sort of way, and the lives and the memories start to fuse together. I was starting to get sort of a Vanilla Skies vibe from it, that sort of just bizarre psychological thing where by the end of it, you're not going to know which one is which and whose body and whose brain is whose. And so I thought, you know, if they kind of go that way with it, you know, I might be pretty entertained by it.
I fear that looking at the trailer, this is going to be either The Man with Two Brains with Steve Martin, but darker, or The Thing with Two Heads starring Rosie Grier.
I thought pretty much the exact same thing the first time I saw it. So I may just be giving it, you know, the benefit of the doubt that it might be better than what it appears on the surface. But it's also looks typical of those kind of movies where you think they might be sitting on a very good and very strong plot with a lot of themes about humanity and things like that, and then just not act on it and just go a much more polished thrill ride kind of venue with it. That'd be disappointing.
You think this could cut one of two ways then?
Yes. And it's either going to be better than you think or worse than you think.
If we were to rate this then, bottom line, if we were to rate this based on the trailer and plot synopses, how would we rank this?
I would say, you know, I would honestly say rental. Just for the, you know, I would say matinee. It's pretty close to saying matinee, but at the same time, it's a risky move, you know, sitting down to watch this movie. You may just get disappointed and may have gotten your hopes up. So I would say rental.
I'm going to be in the ballpark with you. I could see this cutting either way. Rental.
Yeah, just enough to be on the radar, but you know, we'll see how it does.
Moving on to what is probably going to be a surefire hit this summer. Pixar's latest, Inside Out.
I'm joy. This is sadness. That's anger.
What?
This is disgust. And that's fear.
Ah!
We're Riley's emotions.
Woo-hoo! Yay!
These are Riley's memories. They're mostly happy, you'll notice, not to brag.
I wanted to maybe hold one.
What happened? Sadness?
She did something to the memory.
Is everything okay?
You know, it's I love Pixar because realistically, they, as a film studio, and I guess they're considered a film studio now that they're still kind of work with Disney, but have really become a separate entity. You know, they've got the most amazing track record of any studio. I mean, just about every single one of their movies, if not all of them, almost all of them, have been very successful, if not just absolute hits. And they're always pushing the boundaries too. You know, this movie seems like a very strange choice. It seems very surreal, and you can't really tell, you know, where it's going to go, but somehow you know that it's going to be great.
Do you have kind of a sense of what this movie is about? Can you give us a plot summary?
You know, I was trying to get a hold of it, and it's really hard to define. As far as I can tell, the whole thing is little to do with the main characters and more to do with the characters within those characters. I guess it's all the different facets of human emotion split into different characters. I mean, they have joy, fear, anger. So they've got all these different little people that live inside your mind, and they kind of work at a big control center. From what I remember, that's how it worked.
And deals with the complexities of a preteen girl moving from Minnesota to San Francisco.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're talking about a huge corporate merger is almost what the story is sort of looks like from the inside. It's a very interesting take. It seems very original. At the same time, you wonder, it's like, would this be out of the grasp of children, or is it really directed at children in a very great way, just kind of taking all of these emotions that children and preteens and people have and finding a way to characterize them is just a very unique idea. And then to take those characters that anyone who looks inside, you know, how their own emotions work, will be able to identify with them as characters, and then just seeing, you know, what it'd be like for them to operate. How do they make you function as a person? So it's just a very interesting movie to see marketed towards.
Yeah, that's a good question. Who is the audience for this film? Is it going to be wee children, or maybe grown 7, 8, or is this aimed at preteens, or is this aimed at adults?
And that's the interesting thing too, is because, you know, it looks like you can hit that audience, you know, across the board with this sort of thing. You know, I hate to say that a movie will go over children's heads, because I think children are a lot more intelligent than adults, even young adults, give children credit for. So, you know, even smaller kids may understand this movie and the plot line perfectly, and they may understand it more so than adults. But you're dealing with real themes and not just themes that seem fit for children. I mean, there's bound to be a lot of, you know, real emotional situations, and Pixar doesn't really shy away from that. So I think that they'll be able to reach everybody across the board.
They sure have one hell of a voice cast for this. So this should be good, with Lewis Black in there, along with small cameo shots from Dave Goles and Frank Oz of the Muppets.
Well, yeah. Well, Frank Oz was in Monsters, Inc. too.
It's true, he was. This could be an interesting one, even if on the surface, I'm going to play devil's advocate here. When I first heard of it, I thought immediately of the 90s Fox sitcom Herman's Head, which deals a very similar setup of a person and inside are four emotions.
I don't even know about Herman's Head. I don't think I've ever seen that.
It had its moments. We'll leave it at that.
Well, I'm gonna watch it or look it up, see if I can find it.
I may be misrepresenting it and saying it's. I was a preteen when it was on, but as I found, many things from my childhood and teen years actually really suck. I'm looking at you, He-Man.
Yeah.
So bottom line on this one, what do you think?
I'm going to say weekday matinee. I think it's definitely worthy enough. You want to see this one in the theaters, and I think all Pixar movies are worthy enough. But it might not be the groundbreaking, earth-shattering film that Pixar has done in the past. You have to take that into account, too. But I think it's bound to be up there.
I'm going to slightly disagree with you. I'm going to say Friday night opening on this. Pixar, I think, is going to rebound from Cars 2, and from what I'm seeing, I think this could be a very strong property right here.
Well, yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you, yeah.
I'm thinking we're looking at Best Animated Feature Oscar next year.
Might be, yeah. Well, I think Pixar still reigns king as far as I'm concerned. If not, you know, just for their animation, they're just fantastic storytellers. And I think that's still not been matched by other competitors.
Certainly not in the West. I'll give you Studio Ghibli, but then Pixar has been unabashedly and unashamedly said, everything we know, we learned from Miyazaki.
Oh, yeah.
So moving from a film that is potentially really good to a movie that is potentially a piece of steaming shit, Vacation, from the people who brought us the other National Lampoon Vacation films.
We gotta shake things up.
We're driving to Wally World.
What?
My trip to Wally World when I was a kid was the best time I ever had.
So you want to redo your vacation from 30 years ago?
This will be completely different.
I've never even heard of the original Vacation.
Doesn't matter. The new Vacation will stand on its own. Okay?
Near the Griswolds, right?
Yeah, I really don't know what to think about this one. And it seems that the reaction that I've seen from a lot of people has been negative to harsh.
I'm just going to say right now, I am against almost every remake that has been made in the last 20 years. I feel like this one is going to be this year's Blues Brothers 2000. The same movie, just a new year.
Yeah, I think you're right, and it's for a number of reasons. Well, for one thing, it's really hard to tell if this movie is intended to be a remake, a reboot, or just a generational sequel, because when I first saw it, it looked like just a cheap remake, but in fact, this is supposed to be a sort of a sequel for, you know, years from the first one, that this is Rusty taking his family on a vacation.
And it just happens to be a cross-country trip to Wally World.
Exactly. So it's kind of a remake done in the guise of a long-awaited sequel, but it's also coming at such a time, you know, it's been so long, and you have to wonder if any of those original Vacation movies were made today, would they be successful? And I really don't think that they would be. I think the comedy holds up, and they're still, you know, when you watch it, you've got fond memories on, you know, seeing it for the first time, and they're cult classics, absolutely. But, you know, I think that comedy done today would just sort of fall flat on audiences. And at the same time, to do a Vacation movie but do it with today's standards of comedy is not going to, you know, is not going to be satisfactory to the other films. So it's really just a double-edged sword.
What has changed in movie comedy for us in those 30 years?
Well, I find most modern comedies to be pretty cheap. I think the jokes and the setups, they seem very lackluster and not particularly funny when you actually look at them. And even the stories and the characters just don't seem to have much dimension to them. I think a lot of these comedies are really done with sloppy filmmaking.
the actual production of the film doesn't seem to gel with the style of the comedy. And even in popular comedy movies as of late, like The Hangover, I watch it and I just can't really get into it. It doesn't really seem to be, doesn't seem to be there, doesn't seem to be real. It's just really hard to get attached to it.
It's more of, I don't want to say low humor. I don't want to say base, although we could talk about films like Ted 2 and such. You know, your big joke is, oh, sperm joke. That's funny.
It really goes, I think people don't want to do comedy that's really challenging. It all seems to be kind of what is the easiest, quickest joke we can go for. And it always turns out to be low-hanging fruit and as much shock value as they can put in there.
Certainly seems that way from the Red Band trailer for Vacation, which focuses an inordinate amount of time on the fact that Chris Hemsworth is wearing a prosthetic penis.
Yeah. Yeah.
So where would we put this on our scale?
I gotta go with Stocking Stuffer.
I'm gonna be right there with you.
You know, who knows? It may surprise us, but I think it's going to take a lot for this movie to surprise anybody.
Well, while we're on the subject of sequels, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. It's been a long time since we've heard anything about that film, but it is indeed getting a sequel, The Green Legend, dropping on August 28th.
Yeah, this surprised me, actually, because the first time I heard it, I thought, wow, you know, this is pretty incredible. You know, that first movie was insanely magnificent. And I think that first one is still considered the most successful martial arts film of all time, basically. But then, you know, looking into this sequel, there's a lot of weird things going on with this sequel. For one thing, I've not been hearing a great deal about it. It may just be my geography that that this movie might not reach as far as East Tennessee, but there's not been a lot of buzz from what I can tell. And essentially the release is going to be almost exclusively streaming on Netflix and in IMAX, which to me is rather bizarre.
That may be why we're not hearing much about it. AMC and Regal and Cinemark have all boycotted this.
Yeah, so I'm very curious as to the reasons why. I don't know if you've read up on it or anything.
It has to do with what you mentioned, the Netflix's deal with it. For the first time ever, a film is going to drop in theaters and Netflix on the same day.
Yeah, and you know, this is and I feel that this is an inevitable turn for the film industry. Theaters really hate the idea of streaming, but we still are going to get this film in IMAX, whatever IMAX theaters those might be. But you're talking about the largest possible movie experience and the smallest possible movie experience at the same time with nothing in between it.
It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah, I'm very curious about it. And it makes you, you know, wonder if it makes you wonder how what effect it's going to have on the movie. And I think it could turn out that, you know, this alone could kill the movie financially. Or if this movie turns out to be a tremendous success, if it was anything close to the success of the original film, it's going to change a lot in the way of movies.
Netflix has certainly changed the way we're watching movies now. What with its original content now starting to get critical reception too, and dare I say awards as well. It's starting to rack up at award shows.
Yeah, and Netflix is really changing the face of not just movies but television, and it's continually doing so. And I don't think it's going to stop. And I think it definitely is the way movies and television are going to be viewed.
We'll see what this film is going to do for it. It might change things in the next year or two. We might start seeing more releases like this.
Yeah, but then it also, I think, will matter greatly on how good this movie is, too. And that's the other thing that, you know, occurred to me is going to be really hard for this movie to match its first. You know, for one thing, we don't have Ang Lee directing, which he did just a masterful job in the original one, as far as I'm concerned, with him not attached to it.
puts a lot of pressure on the director.
But they do have a good director at the helm in that he did a lot of good fight choreography for Kill Bill. He's done, he also, his big one was working as fight coordinator on The Matrix.
Yeah, I mean, he's a veteran when it comes to martial arts films and filmmaking. So this movie is, even though it doesn't have Ang Lee, it doesn't mean it's not in good hands.
It's going to be a tricky one here. I think the real novelty, as we've pointed out, is going to be its release. How is that going to really affect it? Theaters are now more open to streaming. They stream a lot of live events now in theaters.
Yeah, and I think definitely theaters are always looking for a way to make sure they can continue to get people in seats, which I think is a good thing, because I do have the opinion that that's really is the best way to experience a movie. But I've come a long way with Netflix. You could still enjoy a movie in a wonderful personal way, you know, from home. But, you know, I would hate to see movies just go from being in theaters to being on people's tablets. And I don't think it'll be quite that bad. And I think even if we see more streaming, the movie theater always has something up its sleeve.
So where do we place this one on our ratings?
Well, personally, I would place this one on opening night, even though I may not be able to see the movie that way. If it were going to be released widely through theaters, I'd be there on opening day.
So in terms of going, you may be able to have it on Netflix, but if you can, see this one in IMAX.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the way I see it. But I'm going to be watching it on Netflix, and I kind of don't feel so good about that. But we'll see how it works.
Indeed. And our last film up, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., a rehash of the 1960s television series spy drama.
You ought to investigate Victoria Vinciguerra.
They will send an army to stop us.
We must give them an appropriate welcome.
It's better for the mission that we get to know each other a little bit more intimately.
What does that mean?
It means I like my woman strong.
Who you want to wrestle?
No, I did not say that.
In the 90s, there was a huge push toward films based around 60s television comedies. The Addams Family, the most successful, but you also had Beverly Hillbillies, The Flintstones, Car 54, Where Are You?, McHale's Navy. It's been 20 years since Hollywood went this direction. So here we have The Man from U.N.C.L.E., a spy thriller that's trying to blend in elements of comedy.
Yeah, this one looks really attractive to me. For one thing, probably the biggest thing for me is Guy Ritchie directing. Of course, he's probably most famous for his early films, and then lately has been doing a lot more of the big-budget action thrillers and the Sherlock Holmes series, which really kind of seems to be a departure from his early work. But with a movie like this, and then just thinking about what he could do with it, it's a very attractive combination.
We have a comedy spy movie here, which I find interesting. There's been a move toward that in the last few years, and I think really it's not so much like the Hangover of Austin Powers, but now it's more of the Archer aesthetic.
Yeah, it's kind of mixture of action and comedy, and I'm thinking a lot of the Sherlock Holmes movies with Robert Downey Jr. You could quite easily call them comedies because they're very quirky. They're very off the cuff. Essentially, they're action films that don't take themselves seriously, because it gets really tiring, especially for me, because I'm not particularly a big action fan, because in some of these movies, just all the characters just take themselves way too seriously when they make much better comedic characters. And I think Guy Ritchie too, in his early stuff, early gangster films, he was, you know, he really wanted to kind of reinvent the way that we saw these gangster films. He made Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, and it was, you know, all these horrible, mean villains that you've seen millions of times in other movies, except you're seeing the different side of them that is just flat out hysterical. And then you still keep every bit of the comedy action elements of the film.
So where do we put this one in our categories?
This one's tough for me to say. I'm gonna say a weekday matinee for me. Despite as good as it looks, I don't want to be too disappointed by it, but I don't believe that I will be disappointed by it.
I'm going to put it somewhere between rental and streaming. It looks interesting, and I give Guy Ritchie the benefit of the doubt here, but at the same time, I fear that this is just a rehash and building off like a cash grab on the Mad Men aesthetic that's been going on in films lately.
Yeah, the sort of 60s kitsch has been very popular, but it also, in these sort of action films, brings a lot of memory to some of these old, James Bond and the Italian Job and some of these older action films that are kind of getting a new audience. So, I can go either way on that style. And yeah, we are seeing a lot more of that.
Don't know if that's going to stop, but let's hope this is a good chance for Guy Ritchie to get back into mainstream filmmaking. It's been a while since we've seen him at the top of his form, I think.
Yeah, I think so too, and especially when you see what an influential director he is with his early films, it still feels that there's a large audience that hasn't seen that from him. People that are familiar with his, bigger action movies might not be quite as familiar with his early stuff. So I'd like to see a lot more of that originality in these newer films.
Well, Jameson, before I let you go, I know this isn't a summer movie, but I have to ask you, what are your thoughts about Episode 7 this December?
Episode 7? I don't know this film.
It's some little indie production that's coming out. It's some sci-fi opera thing. It's got a couple big names attached to it, but...
I don't know. Could be good, but... I remember seeing a poster that seemed to be pretty underwhelming, so... I don't know if you happen to see that walking through a theater.
Not yet, but I don't know. The trailers have been, they've been attractive, but then as we were discussing here, all of these films have attractive trailers. Doesn't make a good film.
Yeah. Well, truth of the matter is it's a pretty huge film, regardless of how snarky I pretend to be about it. These are really hard to judge. Because I remember being excited when episode, 1 through 3 was coming out, but sort of getting less excited. The first one, when that came out, that was a big deal. But I was young and I was all right with Jar Jar Binks and was surprised to find that, most people were horribly offended. I think I've grown into it a little bit, and I don't consider myself a Star Wars fan. Per se, but like I'm definitely, I remember watching, the films before they were altered on VHS, and so I had several Star Wars movie marathons, and it was a big moment when Episode 1 came out. But I think this will be different. I think this is going to be better, honestly. And especially with J.J. Abrams, I think is somebody who would take on a movie with a lot of seriousness. He definitely respects the original Star Wars, and I think he respects the fans. But you may have to ask, the Star Trek fans on their opinion of J.J. Abrams.
I shudder when I think of Into Darkness. Let's just...
Exactly. So now you have to look at Star Wars and think, this is in those same hands. Am I going to be okay with that?
Well, Comic-Con is coming in a couple of weeks, and Disney has announced that Star Wars will be in attendance, and Abrams will be there on hand to share some new stuff. We'll just have to wait and see. As we will with all of these films this summer, we'll have to wait and see what happens with them, but who knows? It's the summer movie season. We'll find out soon enough.
Yep. Get out, enjoy a film.
The SAFTAcast is a production of the Sundress Academy for the Arts. For episodes and more, visit SAFTAcast.com. Until we talk again, this is your host, Scott C., signing off.